Welcome to Sounding Board Parenting, creating healthier human connections through the commonality of parenting. Exploring the world of parenting with high-performing mums and dads from a range of backgrounds, industries, and family dynamics. This week's guest is Dave Clare, who is a father, or as he now likes to put it, more like a friend and not an ATM to his adult children, Jordan, Mitchell, and Dylan. He's also a devoted husband to Toba, and a respected author and speaker on the topic of leadership. Let's jump in.
Dave, how has parenting changed your life?
How has parenting changed my life? Wow, straight out of the gates with the big one.
Cut through the surface layer. Let's do this.
Oh, mate, let's do this. Let's go deep. Jeez. You know what? Always the first thing that comes to mind is always the right answer. Parenting... I was one of those guys who always wanted to be a dad. You know, the kind of bit of a joke, like from when I was 21, I wanted to be a dad. I just hadn't found the right partner at that stage yet to have that with. Has it changed my life? It's probably been the most, you know, I don't want to be cliche and say the most significant accomplishment since my children and stuff like that. But it's been the most powerful part of my life and a privilege to be able to, you know, guide and influence another human being. And the most important thing is it teaches you what really unconditional love is. Like, you love this child without even knowing them. You know, like, it's like a dog, right? You know, a dog loves you. It just doesn't, you can get mad at it and then 10 minutes later, it loves you again. You know, and I think the biggest thing for me about being a parent, as I let all my thoughts rest in my head, is that, yeah, it just really teaches you unconditional love. You know, I was actually saying to a friend of mine who's just found out they're having kids, and I said, you have no idea what love is until you see that baby come out. And, you know, the depth of love that you know, what you thought you knew love to be is nothing until you have that child. It's just the most powerful thing in the world.
There's a deep connection there, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Like, it's the, how do you... You know, how do you have so much love for someone you've never met before?
You're taking me back. You're taking me back to the moment, just saying those words.
Yeah, like, you know, just said to me, that's, you know, what is, you know, parenting, you know, done for me? Well, it's made me realize what unconditional love. There's all a bunch of other little things, but the most powerful thing to me is just understanding what really unconditional love is. And you know what is that, and that's tested, as you know, now we're empty nesters, you know, my youngest is 21 now. But you know, the your beliefs and your biases and your being willingness to let them become who they want to become and not trying to put, you know, any pressure on that. You know, our job is to guide them and mentor them, help them to become the best human beings that they can be, but it's for them to make their choices in terms of how they want to express that into the world. So that unconditional love gets tested, you know, throughout every phase of being a parent, because, you know, as you understand it, they'll tell you that, hey, it's just a phase, don't worry about it. But any parent who gets told that it's just a phase, here's my word of advice and my years of wisdom, there's always another phase following it. So it's like,
strap yourself
it's a phase
in.
Of phases. Well, it's just a phase, don't worry about it, they'll get over that. Yeah, they do, and then they get into another phase. No, that's just a phase. But, mate, unconditional love, phases. Like I would, even today, and you know, I start to understand, you know, how my parents, you know, the things that when you're a kid, you don't understand why your parents are the way they are. And, you know, I even catch myself telling the kids, you know, wait till you're a parent, wait till you have a child, and then all of this stuff that mom and dad talk about, you'll understand. You go, ah. Because we didn't understand until we had children.
I'd love to. We're going to circle back to that. It's a topic that I think Everyone has different viewpoints on as well. So I'm interested to know yours. What roles do you play in life at the moment, Dave?
This is a really cool and exciting time for me because it's kind of like my kids are my best friends now. You know, but I still play, I guess, mentor or sounding board, if anything else. You know, they'll come to me for advice. And really cool, because really, do I have to play ATM? I don't play that role anymore. So or very rarely, but I'd always be there if they needed it. Mentor and friend, you know. And one of my philosophies I had with the kids growing up is I'd rather have you hate me now and love me later than love me now and hate me later. So I was pretty firm but fair as a parent, you know, and that was the role I played then. But now I get to play the role because, you know, of the, you know, the strong values that they have and the disciplines and the, all the bits and pieces. Whilst it was frustrating that they went through, I now get to play a role where we have really just a great, loving, friendly relationship, you know, and, you know, they're still respectful of me as dad. But outside that, I get to be mentor, you know, and I don't have to be disciplinarian, organizer, all that sort of stuff, protector, although I still always will be. As much to my kids' dismay, dad's always been a protective person, so. Yeah, it's really cool. It's a real fun stage of life, actually. You know, to be able to go and sit at the bar and have a drink with the kids now. It's and different levels of conversation and talk about, you know, some things that are really meaningful in their lives. And yeah.
That's really cool. It's an awesome, awesome way to put it. And obviously completely different for myself in the phase that I'm at with Oscar being 2.5. So it's really cool to chat to someone that's in that different phase. Like, I really enjoy listening to
you. You gotta make sure that he's not sticking a fork or a knife in a socket right now, as he's experimenting. Whereas, you know, I'm encouraging my children to experiment, but not in that fashion.
He's just throwing them all at me at the moment, to be honest. He's just that's the dinner time ritual is a fork to the chest. That's what it's all about at the moment. I'm interested to know, you mentioned being a mentor in this phase and that's a role that I'm sure you've played at other times in their lives as well. What have you learned from your children? What have they taught you?
You know, that's another awesome question. Like, because you learn so much from your kids if you're willing to learn. If you know, once again, first thing is, you know, I think it was Stephen Covey, you know, said, you know, I don't understand my children. They don't listen to me, you know. And he's like, listen to that statement. I don't understand my kids. They won't listen to me. Well, if you want to understand your kids, who should be listening to who? Right. And so I've always remembered that concept in my mind is that, you know, to seek to listen to my children more, because, you know, I learn about what I've learned. It's not more so what I've learned. I've certainly learned, hopefully, to be a good dad and the things that were important to help, you know, be the guide and stuff like that. I've learned a lot about myself in terms of some of the things that frustrated me about my children were things that were frustrating me about myself. And I didn't want to see them have to deal with that kind of thing. So I wanted them to be, you know, be better, to have more evolved than me. And so I learned a lot about myself and the things that I really didn't like about who I was, and to help me, you know, mirrors and magnets in that sense. You know, I also learned that it's okay for them to be whoever it is that they want, not who I wanted them to be. And also learned that the importance of, like, I already knew the psychology of the human mind and all that in terms of conditioning influences. And but I, you know, they've made it very clear when I was, well, they felt I was actually forcing my beliefs onto them. You get to learn that my job isn't for me to give them my beliefs. My job is to help them develop their own beliefs in terms so that they can become the best that they want to be in the world, in their world, and how they see things. And they've also taught me, you know, kept me young at heart, which is really cool. Taught me the importance of play and focus and, you know, being in the moment and all those things that you tend to forget and get pulled away from. So, you know, I've learned so much. I would like to think I've learned equally, if not more, from them than they've probably learned from me.
You mentioned play there. How important do you believe play is in a child's life? And then an extension from that, our lives as well.
Yeah. Well, I think in a child's life, it's absolutely critical. And you know what? It's pretty critical in ours because, you know, how do you feel when you're playing? When you're, you know, whether playing sports, playing games, creative imagination, whatever it is, you know, that's, to me, I think that is the greatest expression of us as human beings in terms of when we're at play. And, you know, whatever that's, whether you're playing something professionally or you're playing something just for fun. And I think it's absolutely critical. And with kids, it was enabled me to keep that fun sense of play. Now, right now, they might think, geez, Dad, can you just be a little bit mature right now and stop playing all the time? But you know what? What's the old saying? You know, you don't grow old because you stop playing. You stop playing because you grow old, or something like that. You know, and I'm going to grow old, but growing up is not mandatory. Growing old is mandatory, but growing up isn't. And I love the fact that I can still be childlike, and you know, that's the best part of it now. And it embarrasses my kids, so it makes it even more fun.
It's interesting you mentioned that around still being able to play now, because it's only, honestly, like, I thought my initial perception of what parenting is all about being serious. And I don't know if that's just come from my childhood or what I've seen out there in society, but that just changed. That was flipped on its head when Oscar was born, and especially in his toddler phase right now as well. I'm actually just writing an article at the moment around the topic of play, just broadly the topic of play.
Oh, good.
And it's interesting you mentioned that, because honestly, we talk about life being this game and playing the game of life. And who are the people that we know, that we all know, that are the best at playing games? It's our children. And it sort of forced me to think about it in a different way, that maybe I should start taking more notice of how Oscar and how other children live in moment to moment and play. Because if this thing called life is a game that we are playing, then we should be learning from the greatest teachers of all, which in that sense could be our children.
Yeah, absolutely. When you think about the future, say 10, 15 years from now, what do you think the most important skill sets that human beings are going to need to thrive in a newly redefined world, especially past all this stuff that we're dealing with? But, you know, and with the global economy, the gig economy, the future of work, all this sort of stuff, what are some of the really core skill sets you think are going to be required?
I think it's going to be around people, to be honest, being able to connect and create.
Right. So connect and create. So they need to have social skills, and they're going to need to be able to be a creative, right? And because, you know, we have artificial intelligence, but we don't necessarily have artificial creativity. You know, and whether that does get developed or not with machine learning, who knows? But so if you imagine now how important, and what can you be doing with Oscar right now that would help him develop social skills and expand his creative mind?
Just being with him and playing in a child-led manner, I believe, as well.
Yeah.
Not me dictating to him how we're going to play.
Yep. That's right. And, you know, forget some of the rules. And you want to know, it's like when we were taught, they had to color within the lines, and we squished the creativity out of people. And, this here, like this playtime that you have with him, is really important to, you know, almost like don't try and force too many rules on the play. And let, because what you're actually doing is you're developing his framework for thinking. And like anything, there's rules in any game and stuff like that, but rules can be bent and pushed and stretched, and boundaries created and even broken, because that's how new rules get created. And, so just be mindful of all that. This is all the conditioning influence, especially at the age he's at right now, that can have a massive impact. But if you think, you know, creativity, social skills, all these things, the ability to interact and connect with people at all levels, you're developing those now.
Yeah, well,
and this is why play is so important.
Totally. Like what you're starting to dive into there is the difference, or the types of play in terms of structured, unstructured, having a finite or an infinite mindset. They're all linked, and they all start from day one.
Does there have to be a winner? I mean, I'm not. You know, this whole thing is a big debate that goes around about, you know, whether we should give 45th place trophies to people for participation and stuff like that. Once again, it depends on the rules of that particular game. You know, I don't want to set people up with false expectations, and not everybody has to be, you know, a champion at this, that, or the other. But if we can, it's more about developing the processes in their minds that are very, you know, like sponge-like right now. That's what matters most, is helping them to do that. And I always used to joke, like, algebra. Like, you know, do you use algebra today?
No.
You know, no. Could you remember any algebraic...
Don't think so.
You know, formulas? No. But what is the fundamental of algebra? You know, the fundamental of algebra is taking complex equations and simplifying them, right? So through learning algebra and learning those formulaic processes and complexity to find ways to simplify those sorts of things, you're training your brain to turn the complex into something simple.
I've never thought about it like that before, and that again has just flipped my perspective, which is the beautiful thing of these conversations.
Yeah, but so like when people are like, oh, what's the point of learning algebra? I'm never going to use this stuff. Like, I've probably said it too, but I believe I use algebra every day with all my clients and things like that. I can look at something very complicated and find a simple formula in there that we can use to apply to help achieve the results that the person's looking for. But that I would attribute back to algebra. So if we, you know, the same thing. So if you look at play and how did that, it's not just about playing. It's what are you learning from the art of playing?
Being able to connect it with, I don't know if it's an outcome, but being able to connect it with something that's going to develop later in life as well.
Yeah, well, you're just connecting thought processes. I work with a state basketball team here in WA, and it's a leadership coach for the board and the coaches and the team and stuff. And I was talking to one of the coaches in the early sessions that we had, and he's like, "Oh, you know, it's just we're teaching them skills in terms of basketball and da da da." And I said, "Well, give me one of the core skills that you teach them." He said, "Okay, well, we teach them to dribble left-handed and right-handed." And I said, okay, if it's a right-handed kid and they're learning how to dribble right-handed, what part of the brain are they using? Well, they're using the left brain, okay. And when you teach them to use the odd hand then, that they're not used to using, what part of the brain? Well, they're using the right brain, okay. So what you're doing is by teaching them to dribble both hands and back and forth stuff to connect both parts of their brain to use left and right brain. And how important do you think that might be in that child's development in life to be able to access both parts of your brain?
What's going to correlate with handling times of stress or whatever it might be in adulthood, there's going to be plenty of situations.
Yeah, well, you're going to be creative in your logic mind. You're going to be able to access both, and instead of just becoming totally too logic about stuff and then not looking at any ability to solve problems or do it like creative side. And so, you know, this is through basketball or play, learning, you think, oh, I'm just learning how to dribble left and right hand so that I can be a better player on the court. No, it's actually teaching you a lifelong skill to be able to tap in and how to access both parts of your brain that you can use in all areas of your life going forward.
Let's take a sharp left and take us back to the moment behind you finding out you were going to be a dad.
Wow. Like leading up to the moment that I, or like when I,
yeah, passed. Yeah. Whatever comes to mind in terms of the story behind that moment, would love to hear it.
Okay. It might be a little bit of an interesting one here, because my then wife, who's the biological mother of my two biological kids, she didn't want to have babies. She didn't want to have kids. Anyway, I don't judge her for that. It's just the fact it was, but she knew that I did. So she said, be willing to have one, you know, one child, to, you know, cause she wanted to be with me and, you know that I wanted to have kids. So she was willing to have one child, which ended up being Mitchell. And, so to find out that she was pregnant, it was fairly exciting. You know, like just at first, you know, it's just kind of those things just like, really? Like it's almost like a surreal, this moment that I've always been waiting for, because, you know, by 25 I was ready, but I wasn't with the right person. Then I think, yeah, it would have been just about 30 when Mitchell was born. So you know, I've been this desire to be a dad for so long. Like I was almost like the pseudo dad to all my buddies and friends that I would hang around with, you know, because I was always a few years older, but I was always the fatherly figure. So I was just like ready to be a dad. So, yeah, you know what? It was, yeah, it's just, you get access to a part of your brain where it doesn't have words to just describe the emotional feeling of finding out that I was going to be a dad. Now, also it came in a little bit of panic because, you know, I wanted to have a boy first. And I only say this because, you know, some people think, you know, have their opinions on this sort of stuff. But I'm one of three brothers, and my two cousins are boys, right? So the five of us growing up together, all boys. I didn't know how to deal with girls, like in terms of, like, you know, I didn't have a sister. I don't know. Like, so as a
don't
as
worry,
a
I'm dad, in the same like, boat.
Yeah, I'm like, I hope it's a boy first, because as long as they have a boy first, and if there's a girl comes out, they're like, okay, I've got a boy. I know what. I can handle that. but that was my rationale at the time. I'm not saying it was right or wrong. I'm just telling you that's what I was thinking at the time. yeah, but it was just, yeah, it was, you know, the special, you know, I used to sit there and I, every chance I could get old belly rub, feel the body moving, you know, feet pushing out on, you know, those wicked moments of life. And, yeah, like it was just, apart from obviously the stress of also having, you know, the pregnancy and stuff like that, there's ups and downs and everything like that, and stress and pressure when you're working, and we were building a house at the time, and, you know, it was, yeah, it was all consuming, but you know what, it was just the most amazing day of my life when I found out I was going to be a dad. It was, yeah. And like I said, it was so surreal because I wanted to be a dad for so long.
How do you feel? Yeah. How do you feel right now, reflecting back on that time of your life?
You know what? You know, the function of your brain, your mind doesn't know what's real or perceived, right? So as I flick back, and my picture in my brain is going back to that moment, I can see the house. I remember where we were. You know, they're going to tell my mom and dad, and you know this. So all my physiology right now is almost the same. I can't stop smiling. I keep getting swords.
Just for everyone out there, he's not lying as well. There's a small ear to ear.
Yeah, it's just like, it's so, yeah, it's just, yeah, it's so hard to describe. It was just so wicked. It's just like the best.
I appreciate yeah. you.
You know, and it was funny though, because like from a, when was agreed to, like, okay, let's try and have a child, and that's great. And I'm thinking, this is awesome. We're going to get to practice for a while. But that, you know, that first time off the pill, we obviously do what you do to have a baby. The next morning she wakes up, my nipples are sore. I'm like, no way.
No way.
That's not fair. It's like, and sure enough, go to the doctor a couple weeks later, and yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Claire, you're pregnant.
It was meant to be.
Oh, yeah, it was quite special. You know what? And I can tell you a funny story about the day of the delivery. I tell you, it was far out. Yeah, we were at the hospital. Of course, I was there, and I wanted to be there to cut the umbilical cord and do all that cool stuff. And geez, that stuff's grisly. I don't know, did you get to cut the umbilical cord?
I did.
Yeah, like, yeah, so it's, but so I'm there at the business end. I wanted to be there with a baseball glove and a hat and get a photo, and I wasn't allowed to, which was awesome. <That's, laughs> ready to catch. But I got to be at the business end. And when Mitchell's head first started to appear and come out of the womb, as it went retracted back in, all the skin pushed around, and it kind of looked like a brain. You know, like the images you see of a brain with all the wrinkles in it.
Yeah.
And I looked at the doctor and I said, he's got no skull. You know, because I thought, just
freaking out.
I was freaking out. Because as it went back in, it's just like, oh, I turn and look, and I think, oh no, it just looks like a brain with skin over it, right? And the nurse and doctor start chuckling a little bit there. And they said, no worries, Dave, it's just the skin. Gathering back on the skull as it, when it comes back out again, you'll see it come out nice and smooth. And like,
I feel like every dad like has one of those stories, one of those moments of just that heart stopping moment where you're just like, I have no idea what's going on right now.
Yeah, and then of course when he came out, he had a bit of jaundice, So Mitchell, when he first came out, so we got to hold him very quickly, but then they had to take him and put him in an incubator and stuff like that. And we're like, you know, of course, you're like, oh my God, what's wrong with him? And I'm like, no, it's okay. It's just a bit of jaundice. We just need to clean his lungs out or do whatever they needed to do. And but you know, you're freaking out because the first thing you get to hold him for 2 seconds and all of a sudden, boom, he's gone. And
yeah, Oscar was the same, yeah. Actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, oh, no, no. And then he had to spend, you know, 12 hours or whatever it was in the little incubator thing. And yeah, but that was really, it was said, it was, I still remember it vividly, those moments. And all my buddies bought this bottle of, I think it was Wild Turkey, and they all signed it and everything like that, and everything was really great. But by the time they gave it to me, it was empty. They all drunk it to celebrate Mitchell's birth, and they all signed it and everything, like they were going to give it to us as a gift, and they all ended up drinking it. So.
Has more meaning behind it now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but anyway, those were my memories of my very first, you know, being a dad, so.
That's really cool.
Mm.
What are some of the challenges you faced in your parenting journey?
Some of the challenges, geez. There's been many. Well, because my parenting journey, obviously, as you're well aware, is not quite traditional. Whilst I have the two biological kids, and then my then wife chose to leave, and the kids stayed with me, which is pretty awesome to be a dad. Because sometimes when couples break up, it's rare that the dad gets the kids. So there's a lot of challenges with that, explaining that whole part with them. You know, challenges with kids. You know, just other than the day, I don't want to be boring with the usual challenges of, you know, kids and, you know, getting them through all different phases of life and everything like that. But the biggest challenges for me were certainly really around handling that kind of life drama or stress for them, because they were like 6 and 9 at the time. And then, you know, within a year of that, I met my now wife, and she had a 14-year-old son who just turned 14. And so then there, now we're bringing in this, I have a 14-year-old newborn in my life. And you know, his dad, his biological father, wasn't actually in his life hardly ever at all. So he never called anybody dad. So I was actually turned out being the first person that he ever called dad, which is, you know, melts my heart. Still, he still calls me dad today, and he's 29, you know, what turns 29 this year. But, you know, integrating that, so we were kind of like, we certainly were like half the Brady Bunch. So some of the biggest challenges were, how do you take different parenting styles? Because my wife has a subtly different parenting style to what I had. I mean, she was a single mother raising her son without any support, trying to, you know, keep a roof over their head, food on the table. She had 3 jobs, you know, and, you know, so the whole philosophy on house and rules and parenting was fascinating for us to find a way to Brady Bunch this stuff together, which presented us all different challenges. You know, we find a way, and it was great. And then getting the kids to interact and to get them to see themselves as brothers and sisters, even though biologically they're not. But, you know, we're really, and this might nothing to do with the answer to the question, but I have a firm philosophy that, it, you know, anyone, biology can make you a father, but behavior makes you a dad. Right. So to all those dads out there who aren't biologically the father of the kids, or even for the mothers who aren't as well, it's just your behavior that makes you the dad. Right. So behave like a dad. That's where the biology is just a scientific thing that says, hey, you're the one who produced this kid. You know, so my wife has a stepdad, like her biological father. She's only just found him recently. But she has a stepdad who was her dad, who raised her. And she always still calls him dad, you know. You know, I come from a very stable family where my mom and dad are still married after, what is it, 58 years or something like that? You know, crazy. And, you know, divorce wasn't something in my creed, and it wasn't something I was brought up in. And if my ex-wife hadn't chosen to leave, I would still be with her today, because I would never have left. But I was conditioned to believe that marriage meant forever. But these are all things you need to help your kids see through to understand about relationships and dynamics, and this is where all the challenges come in, and different personality types. And, you know, and it's quite funny. And I don't know if we talked about this when we first had initial chat, but how can you have, like, even if I look at my two brothers and I, we're raised by the same parents, right? technically under the same philosophies and thinking, but we're all three totally different personalities. You know,
how
and so when you're raising your kids, how does that come about? Like, so if I look at my daughter, you know, Jordan, so she's totally different to Mitchell, and Dylan is totally different to them as well. Although once again, Dylan, 14 years when he came into my life. But if just looking at Mitchell and Jordan, they were both raised by me in the same sort of philosophy, and you know, Tova, my wife, has been, you know, their mother now for 15 years, so she's been their mom for longer than, you know, their mother was. I mean, Melissa's still in their lives, don't get me wrong, but from a, like, they grew up in our house with us kind of thing. So
yeah
it's the challenges are just the whole dynamics and getting them and treating each one as an individual, because, you know, they say, you know, like, you want to treat them as equals. Like, please understand, I don't think you can treat your kids as equals. Because they're both, or in this case, they're totally individuals, male, female, you know, personality types, dynamics, you know, goals, dreams, aspirations, talents, abilities. I treat them maybe with equality, but I would never say that I've ever treated my kids as equals. And when you, especially as an age gap, I was saying, well, if, how can he get to that and I don't? Well, A, he's 15 and you're 13. And, you know, it's, you don't get to drive a car until you're 17. So just because he can drive doesn't mean you should be allowed to. You know, you're not allowed to go to the bar when, you know, like, it's, but when they're younger and growing up, they don't understand the difference in age gaps and development. And, yeah. So, yeah, to me, the challenges are all around the dynamics of treating them each as individuals, rather than trying to treat them as equals. And then once again, when you have an integrated family or a blended family like we did, that just presented a whole other range of.
Time for a short reflection break. This is an opportunity for you to stop, take a breath, and reflect on your past week as a parent. If you have a pen and paper near you, that's great. If not, simply use your phone or laptop. I want you to write down three things. First, write down one moment in the past week that you were proud of yourself as a parent. Second, write down one area of your parenting that you would like to improve for the next week. Third, write down one moment from the past week where your child or children have made you smile. Be kind to yourself and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Was there a moment, has it always been like that? Have you always had that approach, or was there a moment where it clicked for you and you found your groove with treating them as individuals, or is that an approach you've always had?
I'll say it's an approach I've always had, but it's only because of, I guess, growing up with two brothers who are totally different to me, understanding that they're unique and we're all different, even though we're raised by the same parents. I guess I just looked at it from that perspective. But also by the time I became a dad, I'd already been a leader in the bank, and I'd already looked after, you know, large teams of people, and knowing that everyone's unique and individual. So, you know, it wasn't just something I said, hey, I'm going to, you know, just obviously it was just from my experiential learning in my own life and in business that everyone is unique and individual. You know, one of the things I've always told the kids growing up is that you were born different to make a difference, you know, not, you know, so it's like, oh, I want to be like everybody else. I'm like, that just shudders. It's just the worst thing I can hear from my children. I just want to be normal, Dad. I just want to be like everybody else. And I was like, I understand, because that's the pressure of society and schooling and conform everybody. And we just want to fit in. I get that as human beings, but I wanted to encourage that uniqueness. And it started by the way I would parent them. I wouldn't parent them as equals. And like, you know, the joke we have now is that, like, Jordan, my daughter, I'm like, you're my favorite daughter. And she goes, Dad, I'm your only daughter, you know. And then Mitchell, like, you're my favorite biological son. And he goes, I'm your only biological son. I'm like, Dylan, you're my favorite non-biological son. Dad, I'm your own. And I'm like, I know. But hey, can you imagine if you weren't my favorite, how bad that would be? because you are my favorite. Because you're my favorite you. And you're my favorite you. And you're my favorite you. You know, I don't have individual favorites, you know. You're all my favorites. And something, oh yeah, but you listen, because we connect at that level about that, and you and I connect about these things. And so if you want to, again, once compare how Mitchell and I are together and how much we're alike in certain ways, but, you know, Jordan and I are very alike. And Dylan and I have a lot of commonalities and things we like. And, but if they start to try and compare as a parent, you gotta help them to see that each of them is unique and each of our relationships is unique and, you know, and that they're all my favorites.
Totally. I think there's a John Wooden quote out there, famous college basketball coach.
Yep.
And he said, I don't like you all the same, but I love you all the same. And I feel like that applies in some way, shape, or form to parenting as well. We have those different things that we connect with different kids with. That's what I'm hearing through what you just said. But in life in general as well, I mean, there's that deep love for those that you were connected to. Doesn't mean you like everyone in the same way as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, and that's from yourself. Like for me, it's always like you can't love another person if you can learn really to love yourself and love who you are and what you're of. And then, you know, then the joke used to be like, I love myself so much I could love anybody. You know, it's like, but I don't have to like everybody. Like, I love everybody for who they are and everything like that, but I don't have to like what they do or why they do or anything like that or agree with it. But I love them because they're human beings and they have the right to make their choices. But I don't have to like their choices. I don't have to like what they do. I could love them and I could like the stuff that they do. It's a tough thing to do at times, you know, is to really care about somebody, even if they're, and it, you know, once again, this is that whole unconditional love thing. When it's your kids, you look at it and you shake your head as if they've done something really wrong, in society's eyes or even in your own eyes. How do you look at them with loving eyes, yet still hold space for that ability to dislike what they did? And I guess to me, it's like, I always said, like, you know, when people are like, oh, you're such an idiot or you're such a loser, like, that's such bad things to say to your children. It's like, what you did there was, might have been, doesn't mean, you know, like, you're not stupid. What the behavior was probably demonstrating stupidity. There's a difference between being a fool and doing something foolish. So I never, you know, want to tell my kids that you're a fool, you're an idiot, you're a dumbass, you're all these things. It's like, no, that was, you know, what was done there was not, you know, that was a foolish behavior or a stupid behavior from a person who I see as a very smart person. So talk to me about, you know, what was going on that caused you to behave in that moment like that, rather than labeling that child as stupid or a fool or whatever it was.
Talking,
you know, so you, because yeah, well, you got to be also be, you still love them as a human being for who they are, and they're an individual, and they're going to make mistakes. Gosh, do we as parents think we've never made mistakes? Like, you know, man, you haven't even begun to make mistakes as a parent yet, right? And a parent, your mistakes will become. But, you know, you learn from those, and so why would our kids be any different? And depending if we want to still be able to help our children to determine and understand these things, while still knowing, letting them know that you love them. Like, I'd rather them be able to talk to me honestly about what's going on rather than hide stuff from me. And if they feel that I'm not going to love them because they've done something wrong, or in their eyes, or they think that I might just think it's wrong, whether they think it's wrong is another thing, then they're not going to share with me if they think they're going to lose my love because of it. You know, that's taken a lot of work to get the kids. Like I said, I'd rather you be absolutely brutal honest with me and tell me, like, let's have a relationship where we don't lie to each other. You know, and I have to be held to account for that too, because I love you and you're going to make mistakes, and some of them are going to be really big ones and some of them aren't going to be very big ones, but we can't hide. Otherwise, I can't help you.
Being so open and transparent, I respect that. And I'd love to know, what are some of the biggest parenting joys that come to mind for you?
You know, biggest parenting joys are probably sometimes the simplest things, like the picture that your kid draws for you that you put on your fridge or you take to work. You know, the simple things like that are some of the biggest joys. You know, seeing your children get their, you know, those moments in life, you know, their learner's permit or their driver's license, or, you know, it's also some of those are the biggest, most scariest moments in life, right? you know, having that first beer with them, like at the, when they turn 18, like going to the bar with my son and actually father and son, and he's like, I don't want to go do that. I said, it's not about you, son. It's about me. This is my parental right. I've waited 18 years for this moment. Don't take this from me. Right? He wasn't a drinker. Either. It's just like, he's like, yeah, this is, I've waited for this. Like this, you understand how much I've been visualizing the moment to sit there and have a beer with my son and just, you know, or even with my daughter when she turned 18 and like, this is, you know, like the, those sort of moments. And then there's a whole bunch of moments still to come. Like when they get, you know, if they choose to get married or whatever they choose in terms of how they get into the, you know, relationship to be able to do that, to looking at when, you know, becoming a granddad, to, you know, but some of it's usually the most simple things. Like I still remember the things that they create or craft or the pictures that they draw and stuff like that for you. And, you know, just you, to see will, their interpretation be, of the world.
Will you be granddad or pop? You just thought it just popped into my head.
Okay. Well, this is really cool because actually I've been, well, you know, like my dad is granddad and my mom's dad was pop. And I said, so I don't want any of those names. And so I'm going to be the grandmaster.
Grandmaster, wow, hey, commanding.
Yeah, so I've told them, your kids are going, hey, the grandmaster's here. I don't want to do that just to piss off the kids.
you imagine your grandkids' friends, like, yeah, it's just my grandmaster or whatever, and they're just, you imagine
the look. The grandmaster is coming over. Yeah. The grandmaster's coming? Oh my God, like, who is this person?
Sounds like something from, like, I don't know, like Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter or something like that. They're just going to be like bewildered. The imagination's just going to go off.
Yeah, well, so Mitchell, he's like, yeah, that'd be cool, man. And George's like, there's no way in heck I'm getting my kids to call you the grandmaster. I said, you're not going to have any say in it, I assure you, because when the grandmaster comes bearing gifts and the kids go, you know, they get it from the grandmaster, they're always going to associate that with me, like, because I know how to conditionally influence them to call me the grandmaster.
Oh, well,
yeah. Right? So that is a given. Said mom can be called whatever you want, if she wants to be Nan or whatever she wants to be, or that's fine, but I will be the grandmaster.
You're gonna say it in that voice as well, aren't you?
Yes, I'll be putting on my radio voice. I am the grandmaster.
How would you describe your parenting style, Dave?
I just said, like, firm but fair. Fallible at times. It's like, when overall as a overarching, you know, my style would be firm but fair, and you know, where I'm also forgiving, firm but fair, but forgiving, if you want to add in the other F in there, it, to me, it's just that's, you know, and I've know there's Triple been F. times in life when I've been emotionally hijacked and I haven't been fair, or there's other times when I've been, you know, not firm enough or not forgiving fast enough. Oh, always forgiving, but maybe I didn't forgive fast enough or whatever. But I was also a firm believer, like I'm talking about firm but fair, like I wanted to make the lesson so powerful, so strong that they wouldn't have to learn it again. You know, like I'm not, you know, once again,
how do you do that?
Comes to back in, well, back in our days, you know, like when we, and this probably might be controversial today, but you know, we would spank our kids, right? We just, that's what we would do. I think I've only ever hit my kids once. Like Mitchell and Jordan, Dylan was 14 already. But Mitchell and Jordan, when they were growing up, they would have got one good ass whopping from me that they would never wanted to get another one. You know, not physically put them in a hospital, harm or anything, you know, so please, I appreciate, but in today's world, it may not be a strategy that is highly recommended. But other things, like when my son, when he would have only been about maybe 7 or 8, we came home from the shop and he had a candy in his hand, and I'm like, what the heck, where did you get that from? So he had no money, and he burst into tears. He'd actually stolen it from the shop. It was a 25 cent candy, right? And so I took him down to the police station, walked him into the police station, took him to the police station. I explained to the lady behind the counter, I said, can you get me the biggest, baddest, meanest looking cop in the world that you can find, please? And she goes, why? I said, well, my son just took a candy from the store. It was 25 cent candy. And I want him to be interrogated by a police officer about the things of stealing. And she goes, oh my God, really? I'm like, yeah, because I don't want him to ever do it again. And I don't want him, I want him to know right now that it's not acceptable. And if I put the fear in God into him about stealing, he won't do it anymore. And so he went into the room. He must have been in there like only 10 minutes or something. Came out. Poor fellow's a little bit of tears at the time. But, and then I made him go back to the shop and then take the candy, take 25 cents and tell the lady that he'd stolen the candy and give her the 25 cents.
Sounds like a defining moment.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, whether Mitchell remembers it or not, and, but, I mean, he was only 8 years old, like, you know, it's not, but he's a good, honest kid.
That's interesting.
I don't know, did that have the effect? You know, I just wanted him to learn the lesson and learn it once.
And you, like, haven't discussed, sort of lessons. You haven't discussed like that since, or that hasn't ever come up?
No, well, we kind of have a little bit of a laugh and a joke about it now. I don't even think he remembers the actual moment, but we sort of joke about it when we have conversations and stuff like that. But like, to me, I don't know, did it work? Well, all I know is that he didn't steal stuff. He's a good, honest kid. You know what? Some people say that I went overboard, I did too much. Maybe I did, I don't know. But like I said, I can't tell you it was right or wrong. I can just tell you that's what I did.
Well, that's what I mean. Like,
so even, sometimes I'm extremely firm.
Yeah. Even those people,
especially those lessons. Yeah.
Even those people that are saying that you went overboard. I mean, at the end of the day, nothing's fixed and permanent. Things are as they are. Like, if you're doing the best you can, I find it difficult to criticize someone else's approach to whatever it may be. Parenting's a hot topic in that space, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's...
Yeah, I know. Like these days, like, you know, to admit that I smack my kids' asses, like, you know, Mitchell didn't want to sit down, I assure you. And Jordan was the same, but I only ever had to do it once.
I appreciate you sharing that.
You know, it's not my proudest moment. You know what? And, you know, I bawled my eyes out after doing it, I assure you. You know, you know, it was like the old adage, this is going to hurt you more than it's going to hurt me. You know, yeah, it was tough. Like, in our house growing up, my older brother and I were only 2 years apart, but the joke in our house is that mom would, like, you know, you wait till your father gets home and he'll sort you two boys out. And we just sort of laugh. And what are you laughing about? So, well, he'll be home after we've gone to bed, and he'll be gone in the morning before we wake up, because dad was, you know, bit of a workaholic at the time, but he had to do what he had to do to raise our family and take care of us, and did everything that he could. But that was kind of a bit of a joke, you know. And it was like, you know, go get me something to beat you with, and I'd tear off a piece of paper in the corner and go, here, Dad, do your worst, take this, you know.
That would have went down well.
Yeah, well, what Dad would do is he would take us, especially if we were fighting, as you know, I'm talking about parenting styles, it was great. He, like, my brother and I, we'd always be fighting, right?
Yeah, what
more
what
so parenting? My brother, it'd be more my brother beating me up rather than us fighting, more so. But he would grab us, take when did come home, he would take us into the bedroom and he'd stand there and he'd go, okay, you two want to fight, we're gonna do this fair, you hit him and then you hit him and I'm gonna ref this. I'd be like, well, I don't want to hit him, I don't want him, then what the hell are you guys fighting for? And blah, blah, blah. He would put us on the spot and hold us to account. Okay, you hit him, I'm not gonna hit him, well then you hit him.
Wow, it's an interesting way to think about it. And then in that moment, it's almost a teachable moment, because exactly like your dad said, what are you fighting about then?
So we'll get different parenting strategy, different stuff. Totally. But my dad was always like that. Like, you know, and his philosophy for us was no different to business. Like, he was a project manager and stuff like that, and, you know, built major projects and stuff. And his philosophy, which still rings true for today, is says, first I'm going to ask you, then I'm going to tell you, and then I'm going to, you know, in business, he would find somebody else to do it, or us. Then he said, then I'm going to punish you. All right. So we're going to ask you to do something. If you don't want to do it, that's fine. Then I'm going to tell you, you need to do this. And if you still don't do it, then you're going to be punished for not doing it.
What do you think you learned from your parents?
Oh, man. And, you know, that's the great question that I hope you ask everybody on this. What did you learn from your parents? From my dad, I learned the importance of discipline and organization. Like my dad also, to understand, like he didn't have, like his dad left home when he was 3. So he was raised by my grandmother and his sister. So he had no, he didn't know what it meant to be a dad. He didn't have any dad. My grandmother never remarried or anything like that. So he never had a stepdad or anything. So so he just knew he needed to provide because that's what he learned from his grandma. Well, my grandmother, sorry, his mom, that, you know, she did whatever she had to do to provide for her family. And that's what my dad did for us. He did whatever he had to do to provide for us. So I learned work ethic from my dad, 100%. And my dad was always a compassionate person when it came to people. And really, you know, believed in volunteerism and stuff like that and doing things just for the, you know, because it was the right thing to do. So certainly learned that. Mom, on the other hand, mom was always she's kind of like the quiet achiever. She was always there, you know, working the house and, you know, keeping structure, keeping us boys, making sure we had everything, we were fed, you know. So my dad was out there providing, very traditional old English family. Mom was keeping the house organized and keeping things moving and trucking along. But mom was probably the stable influence in life and the balance. She was very quiet, didn't speak much, but when she did, it was very meaningful and you knew that she was serious. And then what we used to call is, you know, she'd have the look where she would dip her glasses down and look over top of her glasses at you. And you knew you were about to be, oh yeah, she even does it with the grandkids. And they're like, oh, grandma's got giving us the look. And like, yeah, yeah, you know what? but yeah, so I learned, you know, balance from my mother and, you know, she was just the steady rock. And, you know, to be that consistent, she was always there.
So you mentioned before about your friends getting together to give you a gift when you were first going to become a dad. I'm interested to know more broadly, how has parenting affected your relationships of all kind, whether it be with your significant other or whether that be with siblings of yours or friends? I'd love to know your viewpoint.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because my mind's going in a whole bunch of different directions because I guess the different friends and circles and stuff like that, it's had different impacts. It's certainly, you know, a lot of my friends in the early days would like, I don't want to say like I was a role model, but, you know, I was always that fatherly figure and, you know, and I've always had wonderful feedback and like, you know, really love, you know, the way that you are as a dad with your kids and hope that I can be like that one day with my kids. And so it was really a privilege and humbling to know people thought about you like that. But also then there's other parts and people that would say that they don't agree with the way that I parent. And it's honestly put stress on relationships, but it's just certainly put a different dynamic again on those relationships. Like even my brothers and I, we parent very similarly. That we have some very common things that we're all, you know, great dads and we all love our kids to death and we all put them first and all that sort of stuff. And but once again, their parenting styles are subtly different to mine in terms of their rules and how they raise their kids. And but then even other friends and family members, you know, I've been said like, you're too strict on those kids and you don't allow them to, like, you know, I remember once Jordan was like just so unruly. It should have been, I don't know, gosh, it should have been 6 or 7. And it was coming up to her birthday and she was just being a little miss, I tell you. And I just wasn't going to stand for it anymore. Like, she's being rude to everybody and that. And it was her birthday. Everyone was around for dinner and I was supposed to have ice cream and I wouldn't let her have ice cream. I said, no, that behavior doesn't get rewarded with ice cream. And I got laid into by family members, certain family members. Like, it's her birthday for crying out loud. Da, da, da. How can you not let her have ice cream on her birthday? And I said, well, how can I reward that behavior even if it's her birthday? You know, so it's interesting. So those coaching styles, sort of those parenting styles cause different dynamics and different things and cause people to look at different ways. Other ways, you're just doing what you're doing. I guess it depends on the dynamics of the relationship. So it's not easy to go, it's had this impact across all relationships. It's had different impacts on different relationships.
Probably still will into the future.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like even now, like, you know, And, you know, I was terrible for, and, you know, now in hindsight, I think it probably wasn't great. You know, like Mitchell was always dad's little champion and Jordan was always dad's little princess. And one of my friend's wives, she said, well, why does she have to be the princess? Why can't she be the champion? Why can't he be the princess? You know, and I'm like, yeah, you know what? I don't know. It was just the way I was conditioned that I was raised in, but I was open-minded to going, yeah, you know what, perhaps. And, you know, and I stopped referring to them as those things. It challenged my interpretation of what I was doing. And, you know, I was open to be challenged anytime.
That's awesome.
Like, once again, there was no rule book as a parent to say, here's how you do this, right?
But you just said you were open to being challenged as well. I think that's a key component in all of that.
Because I only know what I know, mate. Like, I don't know what I don't know, and I don't, if people don't aren't willing to, and so I appreciated those people who are willing to step up and, you know, challenge me. And then it's up to me to choose how I want to interpret that challenge, or not even the challenge itself, but the information from that challenge. Do I want to, is it something I should really consider about myself and what I do and the way I do it?
Is there, is there anything that you've read, watched or listened to that's helped you on your journey as a parent?
Look, I've never read any parenting books. Watched my own parents, watched some of my aunts, my uncles, and the people in terms of, I watch everybody. Like, to me, it's like when you see someone interacting with a child, like, that's the kind of dad I want to be, or I don't want to be that kind of dad. You know, so I would be more an observer rather than a watcher, if you like. So I always observed the way people handled their children and did, you know, certain things or, yeah, like for that, you know, other than what Hollywood wants us to believe about being dads, you know, Steve Martin and Father of the Bride and all these sort of dad type movies where you're the dorky, ever loving, but overbearing father, you know, like, which would probably, I would make one of those perfect Hollywood dads for sure. The unfallible, but you know, I'm lovable, but I make mistakes and I love my kids so much so that it probably could be, you know, choking for them at times. But I've never physically read a parenting book or anything like that. To me, you know, like, I was blessed to, in my own personal development growing up, understand human behavior, how the mind works. So some of that basic psychology. So I was aware of all that. So I was able to apply that. But, you know, that would be the, you know, other than observing other people and what I already knew about those sort of things and conditioning and all that sort of stuff and how that all works. I haven't done anything in that space.
Do you think when your children and if they, when and if they become parents, do you think that the parenting world will experience any changes? Will it look any different in the future to what it is now, to what it has been?
I think there will be, you know, whether it's significant changes, certainly the family structures, I think, may be different. I mean, this whole concept of marriage, as someone who's in it for the second time in their lives, and hopefully the last, the family structures will be, you know, is there a pressure to be married and all that? Is, like I said, a very traditional old way of thinking. Will there be that blended families, you know, so co-parenting, you know, some people might be, I think going forward in the future, I hope there's not pressure to do it, but people are looking for the right partner just to have the child with so that they can both raise that child, but they may be in totally different lives or relationships and stuff like that, but you're the best partner for me to have a child with, kind of thing, you know, like, you know, and with all, obviously, gender equality and all these sorts of things and diversity, it's going to be fascinating to see. It's going to challenge a lot of traditional thinkers, you know, from where my parents grew up in, that, you know, you get married to have kids and to raise a family and marriage is forever. And and so people having kids out of wedlock that wasn't seen as a bad thing. Whereas today, I definitely think going forward, it's not going to be a bad thing. You know, if there's two people, as long as they love that child to death, I don't care if you're married, not married, you're gay, straight, make sure, I don't give a crap. Just love that child. And if you brought that child into this world with love, and you're going to support and raise that child and be there for them and do all that sort of stuff. Once again, these are going to get back to coloring in the lines or not, and the rule books and where the rules should be and where the rules shouldn't be. You know, we come full circle. Should we have to have all that? Do we need all these rules in life about how it should be and who we should have, and, you know, when it's okay to have kids and when it's not? And, you know, what my concern or fear for the future is that, you know, where we live in a society where kids are just either a byproduct of accidents and stuff in terms of, or a strategy to actually get money from the government, or, you know, sadly there's this sort of stuff that goes on. And you know, that bring a kid in the world because of love, like, gosh, and, you know, accidents happen, but love that child.
I can attest to that.
Yeah, you know, it's just, hey, that's life. It's a byproduct of two adults having sex, right? So it's like
beautiful part of life as well. And
yeah, 100%. It's, but this is the future. Does it, family structures will change and family dynamics will change and parenting may change, because, you know, right now there was such a demand on, you know, both parents being working and stuff like that, and a lot of kids were being raised by MTV or Sony PlayStation or the Cartoon Network or nannies or somebody else rather than the parents. And maybe with this redefined world that we're going through right now, where people are learning how to remote work and work from home more often, they might be able to spend more time and integrate, create this work-life integration so that we can spend more time with our kids. And I mean, it's one of the core reasons that I always wanted to get into business for myself, is so that I could have greater control of my time so I could spend more time in my children's lives. Because I knew growing up as a son of a workaholic father that the only thing I wanted that dad didn't give us was more time. And, you know, he does it now, which is all great, but back then I never wanted my kids to feel like that. So going forward into the world in the future, I hope that we create you know, an evolution of work or a future of work where that we have this ability to spend time with our kids. Like, you get to work at home now and hang out with Oscar, and you know, you don't have to do 9 to 5. You could be doing, you know, working from, he's gotten up, you're playing with him in the morning. He goes for a nap at 9 a.m. in the morning, then you work till 11. He wakes up for his nap, you play with him again. And then, you know, as long as you're getting your work done, you might, then once he's gone to bed, you might spend another hour or two getting some stuff done. It doesn't have to be in this window only. It could be spread out over a whole period of the 24 hours. And you spend time with your wife, you spend time with your kids, you do that, but then you get all your work done. Like, how awesome would that be?
It is awesome, because it's happening right now. It's it's definitely something. Yeah. There's one thing I've taken out of this. It's the pure fact that Oscar right now is only one room away from me and can walk in and give me a hug. I can go out there, give him a tickle, have a chat to him whenever I want. It's not structured and set up with rules that I can't do that. And in the past, maybe it has been like that. And I asked the question, do those rules and structures serve us? Maybe they have served us, but maybe they don't anymore with the current dynamic. If you could transport back in time with one piece of parenting advice for your pre-parent self, what would it be?
Wow, that's a great one. What would it be? What would it be if I could go back to my, just before I became a dad?
Yes.
Yeah. This would be a tough one to say. This is in a public forum, but there were some challenging times probably when the kids were just first born, as dealing with the postnatal, prenatal, well, postnatal stuff and things like that. And I was oblivious to a lot. I would have said my advice myself would be there and pay attention and support the home environment more. I didn't support the home environment enough. There's no right or wrongs. There's no judgment of anything that was going on by anybody at that time. But it was just, I would have told myself to be there more. Be more present in those days, because that was like, you know, once again, I got into, oh God, I've got a kid now, I've got to pay for, and I got to work, and I switched into kind of like almost my dad mindset. And then, yeah, and so my advice would be more present and pay attention to your environment more. Because those, and you're in that environment now, these years now, like the 1 to 2 to 3 to 5, these are the most precious years. And I was around a lot, but it wasn't around enough, and I wasn't supportive enough in for all parties in that space. And that's something I have to own myself.
I appreciate you opening up and sharing that.
Mm.
It's
it was tough times.
It's something,
but great times.
Yeah, and we learn from it, don't we? And it's something that resonates with me, though, what you just said.
Hmm.
Oscar's only 2.5, but when he was one, I think it was just after he turned one, I had a bit of a personal realization that led to a bit of a spiral. In terms of that first year, I fully identified with the role of being a parent, but not in the way that you're describing in terms of being there, just being there and being supportive.
Mm.
It was in a similar sort of form of having to provide, having to look after, and it turned into this spiral that sort of led me to the state of being I am now, which is about being not doing more often and trying to find opportunities more often to simply be with Oscar, to be with Jess. And it's taken some hard work,
yep.
but it's definitely paying off as well. So I definitely resonate with what you just said there. And I'm sure a lot of mums and dads out there have been through similar situations too.
Yeah. You know what? But you know, would you change any of it? You know, this is like, what would you do differently? That would certainly be an advice. That'd be some area that I would encourage myself to have more attention or focus on. But outside of that, most things that if I had to say, well, I would change this, I would go back and do that. Well, that'd be me judging, you know, I wouldn't know that if it's okay to do this. Well, that could have created a whole something else. I don't know. You know, it's just the butterfly effect of sorts, or the ripple effect of what those, and to sit there and judge, it is what it is. It was what it was. You know, and I could be critical of numerous moments in there, but you never know the second and third and fourth effect of a decision that you make. You know, you can prepare and plan for it and stuff like that. So, you know, did I make the best decision in that moment? Well, yeah, I'd have to go back and look at all the conditioning influences happening in that moment.
All those factors. Judge it from,
in hindsight now, it would just be doing my head in.
Totally. No, I want
to
learn.
Yeah, hey, there's things I learn, and, you know, I get a second chance as a dad to do that as a granddad. As the grandmaster, I get to...
The grandmaster, you know, I love that. Love that.
I'm going to have so much fun with that.
I can see it already. I'm having fun with it. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You've been absolutely awesome with your time, Dave. And
thank you.
And honestly, no,
my privilege. It's a subject I don't ever really get a chance to talk about. You know, my kids, I did a podcast a while ago. It was more as a business thing, and they're talking about one of your life's biggest learning moments. And I reflect on the moment, because there was, as a dad, it was October 1999. But my kids were the ones who, not knowingly, are the ones who helped me make one of the biggest decisions in my life. As I was sitting on the floor crying my eyes out in their bedroom when Mitch was 3 and Jordan was probably only about 6 months, because I'd started my own business, I'd virtually lost everything. I hadn't made a sale, hadn't done anything. And I was sort of like, you know, what am I showing my kids? What am I teaching my kids here? I should just quit. And what have I done to my family? And you need to talk about what you learn from your kids. And I'll finish with this one. And I sat there like, yeah, I have to go get a job. I can't believe I've done this to my family. And then there's a little voice in the back of my head. It'd be like, but Dave, what are you teaching your kids if you quit? That when it gets tough, that you should just quit. And instead, I had a choice in that moment. It's like a what if moment. I call it what if moment in my life. What if I quit? Well, that would show my kids that when things get tough, you quit. But what if I ask myself to be more? What if I ask myself to, you know, become more instead of resting on my laurels and become who I'm capable of becoming? And what could I accomplish then? And what would that show the kids that, you know? And so because they were there, they were asleep, it was midnight, they wouldn't have had a clue I was even in there. This, and, you know, but that they were the ones, because you never know who's watching, I guess is the point I want to make. You never know who's watching. They were asleep, but they were watching. They watch our behavior as parents and as human beings, and they learn from us. Everything you do, Coach Norms, you are, Oscar's watching you. Whether he's looking at you or not, he's watching you. And kids are so intuitive. And that was one of the biggest things there when I learned the lesson that I learned at the time. But the bigger lesson was you never know who's watching. And what are you teaching them in that moment? So I really I'll leave you with that.
And what they are teaching us. That's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Well, what they taught me then without even realizing they were teaching me it. You know,
how cool is that?
When the student's ready, the master appears, right? So they were the grand masters for me in that moment. They were the ones there that not just being in my life. And once again, depending on your spiritual belief and all this sort of stuff, but they're getting too heavy on stuff. You know, some people say that, you know, if you're a spiritual person, spirituality would tell you that your kids chose you to be their teacher. And that they're there, the reason they picked you and you know, the two parents is that they wanted you to be their teachers. So whether you believe in that or not, but understand that you are that your children's teachers. And when you're not physically teaching them directly, it doesn't mean they're still not learning from you.
We always finish with a segment called Time to Plug Off.
Okay.
So I'd love for you to share where listeners can find your work. Are you on social media and what's next for you as well?
Well, yeah, so certainly the simplest way, firstly, if anyone wants to connect to me on anything in this podcast, anybody wants to have a chat with me about, I will eventually, you know, say, please understand I have a business and everything else, and I have now fur babies and whole bunch of other types of babies that we can. But the easiest way to connect with me is just to go to my website, daveclare.com, daveclare.com. There's contact me, send me a message. I respond to all messages personally. And if anyone would like to talk about this podcast and my thoughts, my beliefs, or even challenge me on any of it, I'm still open to be challenged on any of it. You know, I'm the fallible, that's the fourth F and all that, right? So, or the third F. So that's there. And then what's next for me? As far as my kids go, I'm just really enjoying the moment right now of being friends, mentor come friend with them, you know, in terms of having a real great friendship with them. You know, like they said, like they're my best friends. So I'm really enjoying that. What's next for me in terms of life and business is really continuing to help business leaders and evolve their businesses to stay relevant in the hearts and minds of the people that they choose to serve. And really, when you look at that as just being a parent, are you evolving to stay relevant in the hearts and minds of people you choose to serve? I have to evolve as a parent now, even though my kids are out of home, to embrace my kids' world and find commonalities to stay relevant in my kids' hearts and minds. Because if I'm old school and old fashioned and stuff like that, then, you know, I'm really cool because I get to talk to my son about web stuff, and my daughter, she's into vet stuff, and Dylan's doing some artwork, and I used to do a lot of artwork, and so I'm staying relevant in the hearts and minds of them because I'm continuing to evolve and evolve with them, as I would challenge any business to do in terms of staying relevant in the hearts and minds of people you choose to serve in business. So that's what's next for me. Keep evolving.
I think we could honestly dive into a rabbit hole of the correlations between leadership and parenting. Maybe we could go a 2.0 at some point. But
I'll come back at another time, mate. Happy to do that.
Honestly, Dave, this has been awesome. I'm so grateful for how generous you've been with your time as well. And I hope you found some value in jumping on the Sounding Board Parenting Podcast too.
Coach, I have loved every minute of it. Like I said, this has been one of the most refreshing podcasts that to allow me to be really share some of my own authentic vulnerable moments in my life that are not business related, although there was a taint of it at the end there, but really it's just it's the most human podcast I've had the pleasure of being on. So being a son and a dad and a brother and a cousin, like, you know, yeah, it's such a great thing you're doing here. And I hope that a lot of parents are listening to this because get ideas, challenge their own thinking, mate. Like, this is so cool what you're doing. I love it.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you for listening. Personally, these interviews are providing me a time to reflect on my week as a parent. Let me know if anything stood out for you during the chat. As a new pod on the block, yes, dad jokes are welcome here, it would be great if you could look out for us and share this episode with someone that you think may be interested. While you're at it, why not head to our socials and show some love with a like, follow, or comment. Keep an eye out for the next pod drop. Big thanks to Steelo Media for producing this piece of art we call Sounding Board Parenting. From my heart to yours, I hope you are making progress on something you love and something that makes you feel alive. Remember, this can go anywhere.